And of course, we Lutherans would say, well, they have an important role in safeguarding the gospel. Yeah, that's important. So that Christ is, and his benefits are given to you without expectation. The candles and the prayer beads, and I'm making fun of those things, but you see why it is such an all-out attack. I mean, is it any wonder that the whole world just didn't roll over and become Lutheran? And the only reason many of those European countries did become Lutheran is because why? Because the king told them they were Lutherans. You're now Lutherans. Oh. What exactly is it? You got a problem with that? Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was history, and that's how it worked. So let's be kind to Catholics and kind to one another, because it ain't that easy for them. 10 years ago, the Vatican and the Lutheran World Federation officials claimed they had found agreement on the gospel, on faith alone. This was the famous Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification by Faith, 1999, signed in Augsburg. An agreement which claims to heal the breach of the Reformation. The document notes that Thomas Aquinas, the 13th century Catholic scholar who defined Catholic theology, I mean, Thomas Aquinas is the Catholic theologian par excellence. He used the phrase faith alone. The problem is that Aquinas uses the phrases faith alone to mean historical faith. That is, the historical record that Jesus lived and did what he did. This is very different from what Luther meant by faith alone. For Luther, faith alone was shorthand for saying that faith is all God's doing. Faith is God's gift. And then from the famous catechism quote, I believe that by my own reason or strength I cannot believe in Jesus Christ my Lord or come to him, but the Holy Spirit has called me through the gospel, enlightened, sanctified, and preserved me in the true faith. When the Lutherans, when the Catholics use faith alone, in which they hardly ever do, but when Aquinas uses it, for example, and when it is used, it means faith in the story, the historical stories in the Gospels of Jesus, believing in that those stories are true. Well, that sounds like any fundamentalist Bible believer. Or I believe that, in that sense. But my faith is not in the stories.
So it's not intellectual assent that this is true.
No. Faith is, you know, if Marge and I are walking on the edge of the Grand Canyon, we're hiking, where Brian will be, well, not long from now. Marge and I are walking along on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and we're holding on to each other for dear life, okay? And I'm, say she's the experienced hiker, you know, and she knows what she's doing, and I've got hold of her, and we're going along there. Where's the trust? Where's the faith in that situation? Can you point to it? Well, in a way you can. But where does it really exist? It exists in that bond of confidence I have in her. That can't be really, you can't really, you know, you can kind of see it, but it's much more visceral. It's much more personal, you see. It's the, I will hang on to her because I have confidence that we're not going to go over the edge. I don't have any confidence in myself because I don't know what I'm doing, but I know she does. That's Luther's idea of faith. Christ has a hold of me. I have a hold of Christ. I may let go in fear and in doubt. He will never let go. He will hang on to me. Even if I am faithless, he will be faithful. You see, that's faith.
And the way you can acquire that faith is by...
It's given to you.
Heard the word.
You hear the gospel.
That's where
it comes from.
That's how God works.
And the way it works is that you, in the preaching of law and gospel, what the law is meant to do is absolutely destabilize you from being able to attach yourself to anything except Jesus Christ. Like this morning's sermon. There's no hope in your family, ultimately. No hope in your job. No hope in your money. No hope. All those things you cannot base your hope in. Well, I'm looking around the room and I think there is some of that going on. Including here. You see? So once you've got people, then the word has to become the hand of Christ and reach out and, but I've got you. you see.
That's law and gospel.
The last, at the end of a law gospel, a good Lutheran sermon, everybody should be dead except Jesus. And then we get raised with him. Nobody's left standing except him.
Which gets us back to why we believe it's important to get that story correct.
Of course.
Any strings attached, so that Christ is the only one who's left.
If there are conditions, it is not the gospel. That's the Reformation. That's what we die for. If there's a yes but at the end of the sermon, you have just eviscerated the good news. And with the best of intentions. It's absolutely terrifying to think that the job is just to give Christ away. Here. You see him giving Christ to that sinner? I know that guy. He's just promising him all kinds of stuff, and he doesn't even know how he lives. That's right. That's right. You give Christ away. And of course, what's the famous objection?
We don't want him.
Well, we don't want him, but what's the objection to that? Free.
Too gracious.
Oh, you can't. Oh, but you can't just, you know, you gotta do that. You gotta, at least you gotta make a decision. And that's the next category, which we don't have time for today. That's the Baptist Church. That'll be next week. And other related kind of free will traditions, where the will is kind of cooperates with grace. We'll talk about that next time.
One more comment.
Yep.
There's a guilt. No matter how much my friends would go.
Yeah. Well,
I just wanted to make that comment, that it's not like Lutheranism. I mean, you leave yesterday's sins behind you, and you use your energy to do good today, and you're forgiven. You move on, and you're strong. But that's what I noticed.
Yeah, and that hasn't changed a whole lot. You know, the confidence in the assurance in that system then is in the process of doing. And even then, I think Sue asked it, you know, well, have you done enough? I mean, you know, if you really, and see, that's always the nagging question. You know, think of the Christian in that scenario. Or even in some of these holiness churches, where, you know, you're battling it out, you're trying to be a good believer, and you're praying and trying to keep away from evil thoughts and, you know, doing bad things and being honest in every transaction that you're engaged in life and all the rest of it. And then you look around your congregation or your church, say it's your Roman Catholic church, and you've got all these saints plastered around you, and you've got these priests who are paragons of something. And no matter how high you aspire, there's always a whole bunch of that are way ahead of you. How do you know when you finally reach some point of rest? And of course the argument would be, as I understand at least Orthodox Catholicism, is that the road is narrow that leads to destruction. It's not easy to walk. There are many, many temptations and pitfalls. You have to pay attention every step of the way. So assurance, the only assurance you are going to have is knowing that you are receiving grace from the proper institution to do what you have to do. And if we say you've accomplished what you're supposed to do in this particular rung, then you can have confidence that you have. Now get on to the next one.
Leaving her office, and her final words to me would be, "You mean you?"
All right.
Yeah. It's done.
That's right.
And she wasn't angry. I mean, it was truly, what?
Yeah. Yeah. And we Lutherans, you know, it's important for us from time to time to remember that most of the world's Christians do not operate this way. They're all trying to do something.
When you present it, it's not in any type of critical judgment.
No.
But it's the hope to have the realization of their freedom.
Yep.
Give them assurance.
That's right.
Which means that then you can turn around and do anything. I mean, you can still serve, right? But it's not.
Yeah, you see, the one of the most radical statements of Lutheran theology is that there are no Christian works. For Luther, there are no Christian works. You can't point to something that's Christian.
Anybody can be doing that.
No, that's true. You see, there are no Christian works.
Most radical.
And well, I mean, what? Then what am I? Well, then you could say, well, that's a good question. Yeah.
What?
Well, it's the same thing, really. In one sense, it's kind of related. The Ten Commandments don't apply to us as Christians. And of course, we've talked about that over the years in the Romans class. The Ten Commandments don't apply to Christians. In this properly understood, they don't have the force in our lives as the law. You know, we don't live according to the commandments. They are in effect, you know.
Civil law.
Civil law, yeah.
To help us live with one another.
Yes, exactly. But
said.
Yeah. But the freedom, that's right. The freedom of the Christian is expressed in statements like that. That the Ten Commandments don't apply to us, that there are no Christian works, that the faith frees us for the neighbor. And I talked about that recently, which is what we're here for in the first place. You know, when you're restored to your rightful role, you don't get congratulated for it. I mean, you okay? Oh, now you're actually being what you're supposed to be in the first place—a human being. Congratulations! You see, no. God restores us to our creaturely life, and takes away all presumptions to ascend. You see, to aspire to become spiritual, to become better, to reach God. It's totally an opposite way of looking at it. You see. He completely takes away the spiritual project. Completely, it's gone. It does not exist. Because Christ is sufficient, because he has died and our sins are taken up into him, past, present, and future, now we are restored to our role as Adams and Eves in the garden. We look around. Oh, there's things to do. That's nice. God gave us things to do. Oh, there's things to take care of. Oh, that's good. I'm good at taking care of things. Let's get busy. That's our role. So, I mean, you know, when Bible study is good, and prayer is, of course, very important. The tools of piety are necessary, really, to keep faith burning. You know, that's what they're meant to do. But when the tools of piety start becoming the point, then you get into the holiness stuff, and now we put the ladder back up on the wall, and we're trying to get back up to God again. And then we lose our and remember the story in the Old Testament is not the fall into sin. It's not the fall. That's a traditional word for it. What did they really do? They were starting to storm heaven. It was a rising of the self. And if you see that happening in churches everywhere with the best of intentions. That's why we say that much of neo-Protestant, emergent, all the words, you know, postmodern, non-denominationalism is Roman Catholic theologically to the core. To the core. Without the vestments. They're all on the ladder. You see? And it's the same theology. It's the same theology. It's just a different cloak, you know?
The radical quote from Luther that I recall is when he said, abandon good and evil.
Oh, yeah.
And cling to Christ.
Yeah.
And as we understand that as Christians, it frees us from the spiritual project to get right with God, because he's declared to us that we are right with him through Christ. So now, as creatures of this world, put back in the garden, we can roll up our sleeves and make it a better garden.
Yeah, and of course, when you hear quotes like abandon good and evil, of course, if you're a holiness Christian or you're into that whole thing, that sounds like you're writing a prescription for just antinomian lawlessness, you see. But what is Luther really saying? He's saying, quit trying to parse out what's good and what's bad. You're not the judge.